Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of the Top Cut Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. Of course, before we get too far in, we want to thank all of our wonderful sponsors. So, of course, a huge thank you to Steel Fox Games as well as ETB Games. Those are my two locals that support the podcast all the time. Of course, we also want to take the time to thank Gem Accessories. Obviously, we also want to thank all of our other sponsors: Tier Zero Games, Chainlink TCG, Grimoire TCG, and of course, you can check us out on TCG Player. And of course, we want to thank all of our wonderful patrons for their continued support of the podcast. As far as some upcoming releases with our sponsors, you can be sure to check out on Tier Zero Games. They have pre-sales up for the Maze of Millennia set. And I would imagine within about a week of Phantom Nightmare, they'll have the Phantom Nightmare pre-release going up there too. So it won't be long on that. Also, be sure to check out on Chainlink TCG. I believe they just had some new field centers go up. So be sure to check that out and use all of our discount and links down below. Now, of course, let me get on into the introductions. Of course, I'm joined by my usual hosts, Giant Skyhawk and Trishula TTV. Say hello, boys.
No.
Hello.
As is per usual.
No.
I will not.
And of course, I'm joined by our esteemed guest, Mr. Don Brando. I think it's the Don Brando on Twitter, also known as Brandon, the CEO and founder of Gem Accessories.
Hello,
Brandon,
everybody.
How are you doing?
I am doing excellent. Sorry, guys, for the camera angle. This is the first time I've ever been in my garage doing this before. So we're doing it live, baby. We're doing it live.
It's all good.
That's how we operate here. Screw it. We're balling. We're doing it live. So, Brandon, it's wonderful to have you here with us. I think we all have a litany of questions, but I think the most important and the most critical question of all is, who are you and what brings you into the Yu-Gi-Oh! Space? What's kind of your affiliation with the game? And why don't you tell us a little bit about Gem Accessories and what we're looking at as far as products and things that you put out there into the world?
Yeah, of course. So, I've been playing this game. Well, I've been playing card games since card games were invented, practically. Obviously, before Magic, or obviously after Magic. I'm well younger than the Magic players. But Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon. I grew up in the '90s, so that's my era, right? And I don't want to age anybody else here, but I'm sure you guys probably have similar stories of mine. You know, playing on the concrete out with your friends, destroying those first edition Blue Eyes White Dragons straight out of LOB, just having a good old time, right? It's kind of just been like that my whole life. And when I finally got to be competitive and I realized that there was a lot of things that were missing in the game. So there was a lot of style that was missing. Everything was very bland to me. So I started Gem. And Gem is what it is today because I had a bored night one night and I was just like, I'm just going to make something. And me and making something turn into what it is now, right? It's kind of weird, to be honest with you.
I understand. So these things that you've made, why don't you tell us about some of the products that Gem Accessories puts out and kind of what the what somebody can expect if they go to your website?
So we make pretty much everything at this point now. So our main thing that we really produce that's kind of eye-catching, that a lot of people really enjoy, are going to be our deck boxes. They're very, very bespoke. They're very limited. We take a lot of time to make sure that they're absolutely gorgeous in terms of their materials, artwork, the styling, whatever it is that it comes into creating a deck box. We definitely do our best to make sure we stand out amongst everybody else. But now we make dice. We make probably, in my opinion, the best sleeves on the market right now, which we'll get into the conversation of that. The brand name Apex, which it seems another company has decided they wanted to make that their monocle as well. But later in the conversation, backpacks, binders. We haven't made a binder in a while, but should be making something pretty soon. But yeah, we make everything. You come to our website, you'll see some crazy stuff on there. You'll see some really cool stuff. You'll see some stuff that you potentially can get later on, or stuff that no longer exists in terms of being able to get it brand new through us. But we do everything, and we do everything with style. Make it look nice.
I think that my co-hosts probably have some pretty similar questions, but how is it that you come about creating these products? Like, what is kind of a timeline or a process on these things look like? Because I know that I've been one of the many to go on the website and like order something and it'd be like months before it shows. But that's not because you guys are like slow on things. It's just that there's a huge process and a huge network of things that has to go together to make these products happen. So would you be able to talk us kind of through the timeline of these products getting made and the love and the work that goes into them to make them what they are?
Sonny is...
Yeah, so...
Sonny, I was going to say, Sonny is a big time logistic nerd. So he's super...
I like logistics.
Always been super interested. Yep.
So it used to be different, and only until maybe the last year and a half or so, things have kind of been a little bit more extended in terms of how logistics happened. So before, when I first started the brand, well, when I first started making like big accessories, big runs of accessories, it was, I would only make like 500 pieces, and then like that was it. And unfortunately, both ends, things would sell really quick. We're talking like minutes. We'd have 2,000 to 3,000 people on our website at one time. Yeah, it wasn't fun. But it gave us a good foothold in the market and really showed us that, okay, there is space for us. There's space for us here to make things more accessible. There's people want it, right? So what we decided to do was, instead of doing like limited runs, we still make it limited where you only get a 1 week window and you can go in there and make an order. And then we get that number at the end and send it off to our manufacturing team, and then they make them to order at that point. So a full turnaround time from concept all the way up until final distribution to customers is roughly about 6 months. Sometimes even longer, depending on like the type of artwork or whatever it is that I'm looking at. But once a customer goes and pre-orders, that part takes around 2 to 3 months. It's about a month for them to start production, a month for them to finish up packaging and stuff, and we usually give them about a month for shipping. So there's not a really a lot that goes into it. There's just more of the time it takes for things to get actually done. Like even artwork itself, my artists sometimes they can turn around something within a couple weeks, but there's also artists that sometimes take a couple months, 3 months, 4 months. Sometimes we don't even finish a project. We get into concept and we put something out. A lot of people have been commenting about a few artworks that they're missing, or they're like, where the hell did it where did it go? And yeah, it just kind of like, it just doesn't come to fruition, right? But I mean, I do my best to try and make like the best of whatever it is, the idea that I have. And every once in a while you get to that point where you're just like, it's not working. I have to put this on the shelf and I'll revisit it again. And eventually things end up coming out of it. But, you know, the time is money, unfortunately. And if you waste too much time on something, you end up losing out on other things. So, but yeah, if from concept to final finished product, it's probably about 6 months.
Interesting.
That's a lot of work.
How much hits the cutting room floor then? Like, say we see like, I don't know, it's like how many like designs of a deck box, for example, like get left behind? Is it a common thing or is it?
I got a few.
Okay.
Maybe 80% of the ideas that we come out with end up becoming a product. But there's about 20% that just kind of goes, we'll put it to the side. There's actually some things that we use that have been a concept prior. Like, for example, we'll say the outside of a deck box. I made a design up for an outside of a deck box that I was like, okay, we're going to use it for this. Never actually happened, but I ended up using it for something else. So, I don't know how familiar your fans are, but, back in the day, one of my like most iconic designs was my Senjo line. So it's like a Japanese like cherry blossom tree. It was a mat essentially. So I made a outside artwork for that, a deck box that I was going to make to pay homage to that box, that style, right?
Yeah.
That artwork is, if you guys have been following the brand a little bit, the Kuriyami and Masayoshi boxes that I just came out with, the Judgment Dragon and the Dark Arm Dragon, the outside artwork is originally supposed to be a Senjo artwork. It wasn't even supposed to be for that box. So that artwork has been in my computer for like 2.5 years before I actually even used it for anything. So it's just kind of like stuff that just kind of happens. Like,
God.
It's like, oh, it works. It worked out well, you know?
I love I really like the JD. I love kind of like the big, like, yeah. I love like the grand fantasy, like, style going on with the JD and the other dragon.
Especially if you're an old school player like me, man, because, I mean, I guess it's not that old. It's kind of, it's like 2015.
It does, it's kind of that, the like, the old style Magic has kind of carried with it, but Yu-Gi-Oh! Definitely, like, in the very early days, when it wasn't, like, weird, scrunkly little guys, it was, like, kind of, like, the big
right? Old
style fantasy book, like, opening up, like, a children's book with crazy images, and
it's kind of weird how the artworks have kind of like transitioned to that, right? Yu-Gi-Oh! Used to be like dark and like very grungy, almost grotesque. Well, yeah, I guess it's become poppy, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
like, yeah, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Artwork's become it's a little weird. I'm not gonna lie,
has a lot more. Yeah. I think. It's not that the grungy stuff is gone, I don't think. Like, I think we still get a lot of that grand fantasy stuff. Like, Lord of the Heavenly Prison, for example, is a recent, like, big, like, incomprehensible bungus with kind of some old style. But it's true that, like, it's in the same game with that. You also have, like, the Dragon Rulers. It's big fantasy. And then you have the Fluffles. They're just cute little stuffed animals. And then you also have, insert, Shonen Anime 12. And then also a bunch of giant robots. Got a lot of diversity of art style.
I mean, you can even look at Toss format as like a perfect example of that. You have Sky Striker, you have Thunder Dragon,
right? Yeah, Thunder
Dragon. You have Salamangreat. You have Orcist.
That's true. Yep. A couple of we got some robots, we got some anime, and we've got some fantasy dragons.
That seems
about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just on a podcast about a week ago. What do you guys think about this? So we were talking about how expensive this game has become, right?
Sure.
And I mean, it's not as expensive as a lot of other games are. I mean, yeah, I know, I know.
Well, it's funny because Flyhawk started a lot of the discourse on that.
Yeah, my apologies. This might be my fault.
He's the one that posted the big "I'm quitting Paper Yu-Gi-Oh" and here's why video that went like mega viral over the on Twitter.
I don't know that
I've seen it.
I don't know that I would say 13k views is mega viral, but I was not.
That's pretty good though.
I was not expecting. Yeah, it's not bad. I was not expecting quite the reach. But anyway, yeah.
Well, it also got referenced in like every other creator video about pricing. Yeah, so I would consider that like mega viral within the community.
Okay.
So I've been playing Pokemon a lot, right? And they're I feel like they do very well in making the game very exclusive while at the same time allowing people that want to play competitively not have to spend almost $1,000 on a deck. So what are we missing? What are we missing in Yu-Gi-Oh? Are we missing the alternate artworks on things? Are we missing like the print runs? What is it? What are we missing?
Probably a lot of different opinions. So Sunny actually probably has a better take than I do on this. I watched Solemn's video and that changed my view about like whether the OCG model would work here. Actually Sunny, you might want to take this one. Because Sunny has built, he has like a concept.
So while yes, I have a concept, I also don't want Skyhawk to get us all banned. He's upset.
Listen.
I think that there's absolute validity in your take, Skyhawk. And I don't think that anybody that has a reasonable head on their shoulders has issues with the statement that this game at a competitive level is expensive to play. And competition is something that is inherently baked into Yu-Gi-Oh's gameplay loop and design. So therefore, not only is competitive Yu-Gi-Oh expensive, all Yu-Gi-Oh is expensive. Even at a locals level, if you really want to compete and be good, it is expensive inherently. And I don't think that anybody really would dispute that within reason. My concept that I put out on Twitter and had some great back and forth with was to essentially take all of the rarities and move them down one slot. And then at the top end, make a new rarity similar to what Pokemon does. So the concept, I believe, was every pack has at least a super in it, and the set overall has 18 supers. This is for core sets only. So no rares. Every pack has at least a super. Then you have 18 supers per set, and then you get 8 ultras per box with 16 ultras per set, putting you on average getting 2 play sets of each ultra rare per case. And then you are looking at like 0.58 play set or 0.58 of each super per case, putting it like 3 point whatever supers, play sets of supers per case. And then for secret rares, you do 4 secret rares per case, putting it 1 play set per secret rare per case. And then you, for starlights, you make it 1 starlight per box, putting you at 1.5 of each starlight per case. And then you introduce a new highest rarity, which is, in my mind, it's like a full art secret rare or like a full art starlight rare. Think if Age of Overlord had this, where you have something like Diabelle Star, Typhon, and SP all having full art starlight rare on the high end, and those are like 1 per case. So essentially by moving everything down one level, it results in everything becoming one level cheaper. And that's theoretical. I admit that there's like an enormous amount of questioning that goes into that model. And that I think, though, that at the end of the day, it is so much fairer of a system. I don't think the OCG system would necessarily work here. But I think that in theory, that's the direction that we could go. And it makes the game cheaper. And it does not increase printing costs for Konami on an exponential scale that is unfixable without increasing the price per pack by 20 cents, which would increase the price per box from $107 retail to $110 retail. So I think it's a really fair compromise that makes it affordable. It makes it affordable to play and affordable to still buy the product. It makes the product more exciting to open from a consumer standpoint because you can get more shiny. And this makes it easier for hobby shops and OTS stores to keep these products in stock long term, because these products are sitting on shelves and they're rotting and stores can't sell them. So there needs to be more value for consumers to open the product, which currently there is none, which is why it's so hard to get these OTS stores to stock it. So if Konami wants the game to stay healthy long term, they're going to have to rethink these in some way. I don't know if the OCG model is the way, but it needs to be rethought.
He's you can tell this is his day job.
Hey, I'm 100% with you.
What do you guys think?
It's been proven to work in other games, and it's I don't know. Maybe I'm too much of a dreamer at this point. Where it's like, I mean, why not? I mean, so back in when Ultimate Rares were out, that they were just alternate versions of already common cards. Valor, for example, Effect Valor. If you can pull a common one, but you can also pull an Ultimate Rare version of it. And it if I remember correctly, did that come in?
I think it was Rare Ultimate.
It was Rare and Ulti, right?
I think. Oh, no, it was Perfect. Ultra Ulti, and the Rare was...
It was all the Ultras there. Came as Ultis.
And it's like, some of the biggest.
At some point, it was... In GX era, it was Rare and above could come as Ulti. The Rares and Secrets were in Hobby Box, were in retail, and maybe Supers Ultras were in Hobby Boxes. It got moved in the 5Ds era to be only Ultra and above, and in the Zexal era, only some Ultras could go. Yeah, it was weird.
This is a Ruxin 34 question. None of us are qualified.
Yeah, this is 100% Mr. Ruxin's. Yeah. This is his take, and it's always been just such a weird concept to me. Like, why did they move away from that? Because in all honesty, if we were to continue to stay with that model, I know Ultimate Rares, it was an issue with printing and they were expensive and they didn't want to do it no more, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't necessarily have to be Ultimate Rares. It could be something completely different. It could be a full art. I think full arts would be great. Yeah. Full arts would absolutely murder if they could just – and it doesn't cost much. It doesn't cost anything extra.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost anything extra. What's the issue?
Trish,
there's too many words. They're hard to read.
Not to drag you in, but I don't know if you've had any thoughts about it over the last few days, or if the goal has just been like, not head down. I'm testing for Vegas. I'm trying to ball out, like, price wise, because you've been playing longer than both Sunny and I, and you've probably been playing competitively for longer than Don has. You've seen the whole history arc. Both of them. You got the whole perspective.
I don't know. I think right now the pricing like question, like with Bonfire, I think is the big thing. I don't really get it personally, because I think the price point for the game has remained pretty much constant throughout the years. It's always been about $1,000 if you have nothing to, you know, go from absolutely nothing to like the best deck, basically. Because like when I started out, like it was like Dragon Rulers, and you needed 3 Draco Sack, 3 Big Eyes. Those are like 150 each, and that was 6 cards in your deck. But like the rest of the deck was dirt cheap. Like all the Dragon Rulers were base rares. So like you bought those 6 cards, and then like it was maybe $100 for the rest of the deck. So like it was about $1,000, but like 80-90% of it was just 6 cards in your extra deck. And like it's weird right now, because we're talking about a lot of it as like pre-sale prices, which is all speculation. And something that happens constantly in this community is the speculation prices go through the roof. Because in the past, ever since COVID, every major event, every YCS has been the same weekend, or at least for North America, I think has been the same weekend as a major product release. And I believe this started with Hartford was this trend. That's the first one I remember. It was like 2022, I think, was Hartford. And it was major product release because the punk cards just came out and every event it's been like that. So every event, and I know this personally because I felt this, I have been overpaying on all of my cards because I have to get them that weekend. Like I have to have cards that weekend. So I will play a premium. So all of the vendors have been charging crazy high pre-sale prices, like way higher on these cards. And then a week later, they're half that price. Like I remember in Richmond, that was when the 25th anniversary collection came out. I picked up a bunch of stuff for like my pet deck, right? Like a bunch of like QCRs for the pet deck. Probably spent like $60. A week later, there were $5 on TCG Player. Like I could have spent like $20 for all those cards.
Are you talking about chaos base?
Chaos base.
Yeah, yeah.
That has $20 each now.
Yeah. I spent $20 each.
That's what they are now. They went back up.
Yeah, I know they went back up, but like the next week they were like $5. Yeah. And this is how it's always been. And it's weird to me as an economics like major. Like my like professional background is in like economics, because it makes perfect sense. You know, the demand is really high the week. And those cards come out, so the vendors obviously charge really high prices. But because the demand is so high and they're pre-selling them, they have to meet their pre-sale prices. Like they have to meet their pre-sales because they can't go back on those sales. Like they've already committed to those sales, so they have to keep cracking cases. And they might expect those cards to be short printed. Like vendors were saying, you know, on Twitter, oh, I bet they're gonna short print Bonfire. But you see the pictures of people cracking cases.
It's like it's thrust.
And they have a stack. The Bonfire stack is taller than all the other stacks. Like Bonfire is the easiest card to pull out of all the ultras. And it's actually thrust that's the short print. And that was actually the cheap presale. I think they were pre-selling at like 20s, and that's the short print one.
Yeah,
something like that. And that's the shorted card. And this happens all the time. So when I was a teenager, the way I financed this game was buying cards the weekend they came out that people hadn't figured out were good yet. So I did this with Ghost Ogre. Those were like $15 when they came out. Crystal Wing was like $5. There was a ton of cards. And like my binder as a teenager was like pages of prize cards, Ultimax Cs, crazy stuff. Cause I picked these cards up and a week later they'd like inflate. Ghost Ogres went from 15s to 100, like in a week. Cause everyone figured out, oh, this card beats Pepe.
Yeah.
Oh, like I ghost ogre the monkey board.
And that,
but all that information was out there.
That environment makes it so difficult for new players too. Because when you're coming in, like a lot of existing people in the space have the metagame knowledge or can go look at the OCG and can pick up those cards. Those people are not always right. You're going to take an L every once in a while. And especially when it's like reliant on a metagame, that's not always going to be exactly the same. There are some easy calls. I know Tombox was talking about Lester Pendulum. It was another example of this when that released.
Yep. Yeah, I picked up a playset of those for $10. And there's literally a playset for $10.
I think
mine was Dank.
Danko.
Yeah. Danko was a good one.
That was my big like moneymaker. That's the only time I've ever won in this game.
I think the recent really good example was Typhon, which is in everyone's extra deck.
Flamberge Dragon.
Typhon. The other was the Tombox read about Flamberge, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Flamberge has gone back down, but like Typhon is like up there at like $30-$40. When that set dropped, it was like $5. So like nobody wanted it.
I think what happens is that when established players are treating the game as a stock market, it makes it really bad for any new or intermediate players. Because, like, and it's not that, I don't think, no individual person.
No, I don't disagree with you on that.
They just want to, like, make their money so that they can play the game. But that's when you know that the ecosystem is messed up, is when a whole bunch of people who don't have that information enter and they see, all that they see is that the card is $130. And, like, again, like, if you take the presale price thing, like with Chaos Space, for example, presale's at 20, it does drop back down to 5, but then 2 to 3 weeks later, it's back up to 20, maybe a couple of months.
Yeah.
And so when it gets back up to that point, somebody entering the game then doesn't have the time to prepare the knowledge to access that, right? So
you're super, you're so right.
But get good, right?
I think the thing that makes it tough is that It's not always like that. Cards don't always go back up. Sometimes they just drop and they stay low.
Sometimes they go back.
And what I think ends up happening is there's like a tax. Like there's like a competitive player tax where like if you want cards that are like meta relevant or potentially meta relevant, depending on when you go to buy them, you might be, you know, like getting taxed because players like me who's already spending like $500-$600 to travel across the country, I'm going to spend the money. Like I'm already in, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. So like, you know, they're pricing to charge me, not the average player. And that punishes the average player.
Here's what's crazy is man, look, I'm all for this game. I love this game with all my heart. But you mentioning that, like, man, I'm in it a lot of money for this thing. What are we really playing for?
Who like, knows, dude?
Like,
that's, man, the real question. That's the real question, like, we should be asking.
The price.
We're playing for the Nintendo Switches, bro.
That's so terrible. That's all the price support that we have in this game. It's so strange to me, and it's strange to me in the sense that people are like actively really trying to win these Nintendo Switches. I mean, the Nintendo Switch 2 is coming out, so I mean, we're playing for something at this point. But okay, so here's something. I don't know if you guys know, but when the mats were out for UDS pricing, so I was the one actually helping make those mats.
I did see that a long time. I did see a post about that.
Yeah, so those are crazy.
But there's even things like that, though, that, like, it kind of made sense. Like, these were one-off pieces, handmade. Like, they were really cool items to have.
They have retained their value.
And they, it's because they're so unique. They were something of tangible art, right? That's pretty much what they were. And now it's like, damn, man, you guys just went to Best Buy. You guys were the Best Buy and bought like 20 of these things, and they're like, hey.
So the way that One Piece does the price support thing is actually super interesting. I think we could totally take from that. Like you mentioned, with like the mat being a unique piece instead of like something that exists, like having like something that gets brought up is like, what about like exclusive art cards for people who do well at tournaments?
Yeah.
I
actually have one of those. Hold on.
Man is out here to flex his One Piece collection. But
Cody dragged me. So talking about Cody Angeloff, he dragged me to a One Piece 3v3 a few months ago, I ended up getting one of the prize cards. But it was so free because like it was a 3v3 tournament, right? And it was like top 32, you know, teams got prize cards, and there were 33 teams.
Absolute shambles.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's cool because, you know, I agree, like the alternate art cards is just, you know, they're sick.
So how did now that you brought it up, how did that come about? How did the mat, how did you designing those UDS mats happen? Was it just somebody contacting
you? So for a long time, I mean, for about a year and a half of me starting Gem, really nobody really knew who I was. And I started making a name for myself. And then Julia, who is pretty much the head honcho at the branch. She's under one person. But anyway, so I was in contact with Julia and Franklin, who used to work there at the time. And I would always bug them. I would always be like, dude, let me help you guys. Let me make a map for you guys. Like, look what I can do. Like, come on, guys. So eventually my nagging ended up turning into a situation where they were making the UDS mats and they were like, we need your help with something. I'm like, all right, sure, whatever it is that you guys want. So the first UDS mats, the Alternate Dragon, I think was the first ones. They were like on silver with blue ink or something like that. Anyway, the really early mats for UDS, Julia was sitting there in her kitchen or whatever. I don't know if you guys know, she's like a seamstress. Like she does, like she makes her own clothes and stuff. So she was sitting there on her kitchen table with like, it almost looks like a pizza cutter, but it's a sharp blade. It's a razor blade, but it's a pizza cutter. And she was sitting there and cutting every single mat out.
Wow.
I had just learned that. I was like, Well, it's cool because it's like, man, you were making that by hand. But for somebody that was actually like making them big production, I was like, what the heck is wrong with you? Like, why are you doing that? So they're like, yeah, we're up all night trying to make these things, like, help us. So I started shaping their mats for them. So something that if you find one, I believe it's the Orichalcos one. If you look at the corners, they have really, really round corners instead of really tiny, short cut corners. And the reason for that is because my cutters put the wrong die on their mats and cut the wrong freaking mat. They cut my mat sizes. And when they told me that, my heart dropped. I was like, I'll fix it. I'll fix it. Don't worry, guys. I'm going to figure it out. Don't worry about it. Well, I ended up figuring it out, but I couldn't change the radius of the corner. So if you guys ever see those Orichalco mats, just look at the corners and go, oh, I see what he's talking about.
That's crazy.
But yeah, so.
That's wild.
I've seen those mats. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's
crazy. I really want to put it out there. How people don't think about how much some of the people in this game care and put into the game. Like he said, Julia's sitting there in her kitchen at 3 o'clock in the morning, staying up all night before a UDS, just trying to get the top eight for these mats made. Like, people, I really do believe, and maybe it's because I am just an optimistic cup half full person, I really believe there's some genuine care and love that goes into this game at an organizational level that people don't understand and realize, and they don't think about the logistical challenges that have to be solved to make a game run at this level. I believe that there's better things that can happen, and I believe that there's improvements that can be made, sure.
I
think there's care.
Speaking as somebody who has maybe been the most critical of Konami in the history of time, I will go to bat for Julia Hedberg any day of the week. I'm a judge. Yeah. I'm a registered judge. I've been the head judge for a couple of regionals. Nothing but fantastic in the group. I'm frustrated by the lack of a rulings database, but my understanding is that's actually an R&D problem.
As most things are.
Yeah. interesting. Shout out to Kevin Tewart. I love clown gas. But Hedberg has been fantastic. And I totally agree that, like, there are people there who do care and are listening. I just have a lot of notes, I guess.
Yeah. And you know what? That's something that I 100% also agree. And I'm that person as well, where I really wanted to just make a difference in this community. Yeah, that's really all Gem has been, really, even it's from its infancy. It was just something that I wanted to give back to the community because it wasn't something that I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do this. Like, I have to make a difference. It was more of like, there's something here that I think everybody else would enjoy. And you know, there's a lot of downsides to putting yourself out there. Whether you're in the organized play, whether you're making product, whether you're a content creator like yourselves, at the end of the day, it really is because you really enjoy doing it. Otherwise you do something else. Right. I can promise you, Julia, and the amount of everybody that works on that high level, the high level of Konami at this point in terms of their organized play, they could go make that same money somewhere else. They could go literally anywhere and make 100, 120,000, 130,000, whatever it is that they make a year, right? And they're grinding for you guys. They're grinding to make sure that they get the funding to get all of those Nintendo Switches. It's unbelievable. The amount of Nintendo, I'm never gonna let that go. It just
12 round win match.
This is the reason why.
Not even sometimes. Not even the OLED one. Like, come on, we could be. Getting,
oh, it's not the OLED. I have one. I just want.
At least make one that has like Konami printing on it, right? Get limited.
It's not the OLED. It's the original.
I love that. It is incredible that you can just go like, no, here's a Switch I won from Konami for this exact point. It's beautiful. Like, I love that your role this episode has basically been, oh, you mentioned a thing. I have that thing. Let me go get it.
That's just my role here in the podcast in general.
Incredible.
Yeah. So here's my thing. So I went to a Pokemon event. Obviously, like I told you guys, I was playing Pokemon.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, what's the prizing for first? And just a regional. Well, the regional is almost sad.
The regionals are the YCSs. The regionals.
Yeah, they're YCSs.
By the way, I'm very sad I didn't make it to this regional. Are you talking about San Antonio?
Yes, and so it was.
That's like only a few hours from my house. If I had more heads up, I would have gone and met up with you. I'm so sorry I didn't make that.
So much fun! What a gorgeous city that is.
Well, oh, it's beautiful. I've been to regionals there. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was so much fun. But yeah, so I was like just kind of like browsing around, and I asked my friend like, well, "What do we like? Just out of curiosity, what do we win?" He's like $10,000, and I went, how much do you win? $10,000?
Yep, in the form of 3,000 Nintendo Switches.
Just an Amazon truck just backs up to your house. Here's a pallet, guys. Not the OLED ones. So you're going to have a lot of the regular ones.
I'm sorry, 300 Nintendo Switches. I did my math way off.
Yeah, 300. Even then. But yeah, man. And it's crazy how if they just kind of like just made a not really a conscious switch, because I think they really do know that their pricing is a bit lackluster. But could you imagine? I mean, we're still hitting like really high numbers on YCSs. We're hitting close to 2,000 people at a time, and that's still the same as a Pokemon regional, about 2,000 people. Yep. Could you imagine a no cap tournament big enough, like a Vegas event, right? And it's just we're doing some crazy pricing. We're creating limited edition product for you guys. Man, it would be insane, absolutely insane, the amount of people that would attend that. Wild.
I wonder what's crazy to me.
Go ahead.
The UDSs were those events for us to some degree, and they were some of the least attended events we've ever had.
And I think it's because there wasn't anything invite, after right? that. Yeah, there wasn't much after that. Like if you did well at a UDS, you wouldn't get an invite anymore, would you? Would you get an invite to Nats or anything like that?
Oh, the prizing was crazy. You would have a two round buy for life. Two round buy at every event you play for life.
Jesse, for those who are listening at home who may not know about this. So the UDS belts that you see give you buys at events. I think it's until 2025.
That's right.
They changed it, but originally it was marketed as for life.
They did have like a cutoff, but so like Jesse Cotton, for example, has one, and he gets a free win for round one and round two, notably against an opponent who loses every single one of their rounds, but it's still like a round that you don't have to play. Because it's
so I don't know how true this is. Franklin told me this one when we were still working together. Those belts were actually made by the WWE guys.
Yeah, they were.
That's
I think they're
really
that's what I heard too.
That's so sick.
Hey, I was not in the game at the time the UDSs were happening. I came in, so when I left the game in 2014, it wasn't a thing, and when I came back to the game in 2020, they were done. They've just like recently had the last one. So I missed the entirety of like the UDS time frame. I've just heard everything about them from like hearsay. We remember when this happened X amount of time ago. It's crazy to me to think about belts that give you two round buys for life made by the same guys that made WWE belts. Play mats that are like exclusive, super duper, like $700 a piece play mats now, things like that. Points that you got and the points like translated to being able to use for like you can get free things at events and things like that. Like the stuff that you could get and that I've heard about from these, and also being probably the most competitive events we've ever had. It's just crazy to me.
What about the kimonos? Was that
there
also
were kimonos?
There were kimonos.
What?
Yeah, there was. So if I remember correctly, there's black kimonos, and maybe I'm having like one of those Mandela effect events right now, but I'm pretty sure it was an all black kimono with red trimming, and then the big logo on the back.
We are getting the inside look into the things that never made it to the showroom.
maybe somebody in chat has seen
it. Could have been an OCG thing. It could have been maybe like a Japan YCS, because Konami has some weird stuff. I'm gonna continue my role of like weird stuff, but like the color scheming makes sense, because this is a Yu-Gi-Oh journal, which I don't know if you've ever seen these.
Look just like that.
I've never seen them in my life.
These are super, super rare. They like did a really short production run of it, and then they used to give it out, and then they stopped, and then they occasionally give it out as like side event prizing, like super, super rarely.
That's I can't tell, but I'm pretty sure. Does it have the red also on the paper itself?
Yep.
On the edges, right? Yeah, yep. See?
There you go.
I'm not going crazy. I know that it was an
color scheme.
I definitely believe you. That's why I pulled it out.
It was a kimono. Okay, I'm going to find it. I know people that know people.
I can't pull.
100%. Yeah, I mean, Julia would know. Julia would definitely know.
I can't pull. Yeah. I can't pull anything out. I have a speed dual bag that says Trials of Fire on it. That's all.
I mean, but that's cool. Have you seen the messenger bags? There's messenger bags.
There are some. Oh, look at that.
There you go. That's a good looking bag right there.
Yeah. Yo, nice
the messenger
bag.
Bags. So the messenger bags, they were giving them away to people that like stores and stuff that spent like over $1,000. So really? those are because I have one. Where it's at, I have no idea, but it's made out of like almost kind of like a sticky like nylon material, like black, and has screen printed the Konami logo on it. But anyway, so when I had originally got it, I don't know why this is a core memory in my head, but when I got it, I was like, where the hell did you get this thing from? This guy named Octavio, he used to work at Frankincense, if you guys are familiar with that place.
I heard so many things about Frankincense. It's the you need to count there. There. Dude, I went on a hunt for the first world's prize card, and the only thing I could find was that a guy sold it to someone at Frankincense.
It's really overwhelming. The first time you have to go, I would say multiple times, or go early enough in the day, because like it's visually overwhelming. It's very stimulating. Like you're just looking at stuff like, oh my God, where am I? Like, am I dead? Am I in heaven right now? Yeah. But anyway, so Octavio, I asked him, I'm like, how do you get these things? And he's like, well, you spend over $1,000, they give you a bag. He's like, here, you can have it. Now, who knows how much that stupid bag is worth, if I could even find it. But yeah, like there's some cool stuff that merchandise wise that they gave out. And I guess that's my point, is that like I came from that era where you actually got really cool stuff. I want to see cool stuff again. That's all. That's all I want. I just want to see cool stuff. I want to see blankets. That'd be dope. Make a blanket. I want to see.
How do we feel about prize cards as they sit? Because I feel like that's what a lot of people say, is that, oh, well, if you top a YCS, if you get like top, they did it for top 32 at Nationals. You know, if you get top, usually it's top four at a YCS, you get a prize card.
Three.
It's a third. Yeah. So top three.
Yeah, the fourth place feels bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, they do a playoff for it.
But how do we feel about, because that's what everybody says is, oh, well, that is the prize support. You know, if you win a YCS, you get a prize card. It's worth $1,500, $2,000.
Pokemon's giving away $10,000 cash.
Cash. Or scholarship money, too.
Yeah, you can't compete.
You're below 18, I think.
You can't compete. Well, it's not taxable, which is nice. What's Magic giving away for their GPUs?
$250,000 in total prize support split amongst
Holy, why are we playing this game?
I think if I'm not mistaken, like a GP prize support, they split it up amongst like the top like 200 players, but it's like a prize pool, like kind of like golf doesn't do like one prize, they do a prize pool kind of thing. Yeah,
but even then, man, like just give us some cash. You guys are a gambling company.
Yeah, for real.
You got it. Give me some free play.
A GP in Magic the Gathering, the prizing, if it's $2,999 or less. It's a minimum of $50,000 purse. $3,000 plus, it's a $75,000 purse. First place is $10,000. And if it's a team event, then it's $15,000 for the team. That's kind of like the general rule of thumb. Second place, 5K. Third and fourth, 2,500. Top eight is 1,500. Top 16 is 1,000, and so on. And even if
and
you,
that's just cash, right?
Like, even sure if you get top 180, it's $200 in cash.
Imagine, yeah, imagine like pulling up to a YCS and getting like bubbling out at top cut, and instead of like making top 64, you get 67th, and oh yeah, you still get $200.
I did that.
Exactly 67th. I did that in 2018. Oh. The trauma.
That is very.
What's the best you guys have done?
I went seven rounds deep in Niagara.
I got nice. I think it was the second remote dual YCS. I was one round off of top cut with Fluffle.
Fluffle? Wow. Yeah,
I did the same invitational that Trish got top four at for the remote dual invitational. That's probably the highest event I played at. I got that was ninth out of 16 of us. It's actually super funny that Trish mentioned like the tax thing. That was an example that I thought of. Was I bought droplets for that event essentially to play the Fluffle deck, and I bought that as those at like peak price.
Like, I would like to say
maple money,
$9
in fake Canadian dollars.
I remember that event because that was the weekend Drytron came out, and I was panicking.
Yes, we were about, like, what are we gonna
Drytron.
Do?
That's why I main deck Skullmeister. I main deck Skullmeister because I was afraid of Drytron, and then one dude had it.
Yep,
and he came dead last.
I'm gonna describe the happiness of my achievement, and then Trish is gonna dunk on me with his competitive success. At YCS Niagara, I played Sword Soul. I played my own brew of Sword Soul that I was very proud of. And that was the weekend that Exo Sister won, but PTSD was the best deck, which was like the tier limit, Sprite, Punk, Danger deck. That deck was the best deck. It represented a bunch of top eight. And I played Sword Soul and almost day two'd, so I'm happy enough with that. All right, Trish, dunk on me.
Do I have to?
Just give me one. Listen, what is your number
Trish,
one?
If Raymond Dye has a copy pasta, I think you deserve one too. I think.
I started that copy pasta. That's my copy pasta. That's my copy pasta because I wrote it. I don't know. I have a few tops. I have the top four from the Invitational. I think I have like a YCS top eight, Nationals top 64. I don't keep track. Yeah, I have plenty of regional tops, a few wins.
That says everything.
That's very impressive. Absolutely impressive.
All right.
The best I ever did, as I did.
I don't know if that's impressive. I think that just means that I need like to go outside more.
No way.
Oh my god.
You're passionate. You got stuff you like to do. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Like I made my big post about like I'm quitting or whatever. That's not like a moral judgment for anyone who continues to play. Like that people's achievements in any space are awesome. It's like
the achievement list is in chat for Trish right now.
Also,
I mean, I wouldn't put that on my Tinder profile, but
Okay, they have it in the Twitch chat. They have it.
Actually, okay, they've got it. Right.
They already have it. Yes, exclamation point! Trishula brings up his entire achievement list.
Sunny, it looks outdated, but I think there. So. We're getting kind of close to time. Sunny, do we have any more questions for Don or Don? Do you have anything else you want to say to the people?
I have another question for Don.
Okay,
go for it.
All right.
I'm still curious about logistics.
All right.
Tell me. I'll tell you anything you want to know.
How long did it take before you were doing it out of your garage to now having to rent warehouse space to do this?
Oh, man.
Because I know you have like a full warehouse with a full like crew and team. It's not just you doing this company. You have a whole company.
No, guys, no. It's just me. It's just me and my aunt. I swear on everything, it's me and my aunt. My aunt handles all my back end stuff, so she does all my customer service. She even handles all of our stores. and I do absolutely everything else. The only thing that I do is I hire family, or I coach also high school wrestling. So every once in a while I'll get the high school kids like, you guys want to make $20 an hour? Come through, you know, let's pack some boxes.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's no like grand team that a lot of people think that Gem is, which I mean, it's pretty cool because like I've been able to portray the brand to be like this really big thing. And in turn, you know, I've gotten a lot of business from big companies. Like I just did are you guys familiar with Universes?
Yep.
They do, for those of you guys that don't know, so they do like My Hero Academia, those games. Sure. So I just did their prize support.
Wow.
I made their deck boxes.
That's cool.
I haven't been out yet. You guys haven't seen it yet. It's not even word out yet, but they just received them. So things are going to come out pretty soon. I do things like that. I've had good interviews with other large companies that have asked me to come and do special stuff. I didn't sign an NDA, so screw them. So I was on vacation. I was on vacation in Hawaii, and we'll make time quick, right? Okay, so I went to Gamma last year, and I went with a good friend of mine. And out of nowhere, I got a card from somebody, and they were like, "This person asked you to call them." And it was the head of production for Dragon Shield, Arcane Tinman.
Great company. Also a sponsor that I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast.
Have you ever remembered them?
I pinned a sheet. Sonny, I pinned a sheet in the chat. Come on, man.
So, so fast forward. I was in the middle of a vacation. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had an interview with them. And what they wanted to do was they had something happen in Japan or Asia. They did like an exclusive like sleeve release. So if you guys don't know about that, that's actually really a thing. They did like 200 sets of these sleeves. They sold them for like $30 or $40 each, and they sold out immediately. And they were like, "Oh my God, this is real." So they wanted me to come in as a designer and create a line for them. They wanted me to be their guy to make this exclusive line for the Americas. Obviously nothing came out of that because I'm not working for them. But yeah, there's things like that. Ultra Pro reached out to me. They asked me to, they had an interview to possibly take over their Pokemon line.
Wow.
Because they have the Pokemon license. They have everybody's license. But anyway, it's just me. I'm just a normal guy. There's nothing special about me. There's nothing crazy that I've done. I just do stuff. And some people like the stuff. Some people hate it.
I would call the empire you've built something cool, but that's just me.
That's why
I appreciate that.
It's like two people that run the whole thing, and then the rest of it is just anybody helping in the manufacturing process. That's wild.
And I mean, obviously, there's other cogs in the in the watch, right? Yeah, I have artists. You know, I have a production team outside of the States that does the product for me, and I have a wonderful liaison that helps me out with stuff. But yeah, there's no big team. There's no office full of people. There's no warehouse full of people ready to ship orders out. I'm in the warehouse freezing my ass off, packing your guys' orders for you.
Like, wait, you're in Southern California. What do you mean freezing?
It gets to like 60 degrees here, okay?
It's cold. Okay. You know Hawk is Canadian and Tristan's right. Michigan. This is going to go well.
I'm in Chicago. We've been over this. I moved 2 years ago.
You know what? It's the temperature for you Americans out there. I am at, right now in Alberta, minus 40 degrees Celsius, which is minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. My windows literally have ice across them. Down here.
We can't see that, but we believe you.
There's ice on the edge of the windows. But
I'm not going to lie. I love watching winter from my TV. It's absolutely amazing. I love to go visit winter.
It's great.
It's great. It's great. It's a treat.
Incredible.
It's like going to the beach. At Christmas time, when like everybody comes over to your house and you put the fireplace like on your TV for a few hours, it feels real nice.
I have two fireplaces in my house.
Never been lit. Why do you have fireplaces? You live in California. Anyway, I
build it.
Two questions for you. And that's, one is going to be very quick, and one you don't have to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I feel like it's a valid question. One is, and this does come from the chat, which I know we said we weren't going to interact with the chat, but I'm interacting with the chat. What's your favorite deck box design that you've done?
Favorite deck box I've done. It has to be the first one I ever did, which was my Dragon Blood box. It's my absolute favorite because I had so much input into creating that box from people outside of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Or the trading card game world in general. It was friends and family, and I think that one, it means a lot to me. It's not necessarily my favorite in terms of the artwork, because frankly, it's pretty bland, but it means the absolute world to me, that box, for sure.
Okay, and the last question I'm going to ask, this might be more than a minute discussion, because podcast going long today, folks, heads up.
I'll make it quick, I promise.
There's been an enormous amount of discussion on Twitter and around the online space around the Senpai deck boxes, particularly. The Senpai deck boxes have a bit of a reputation in the community because there have been people that have been asked to not bring them back to regionals and not use them at regionals and at Yu-Gi-Oh! Events. They're a bit much for a lot of people's tastes. I personally have one that I don't use in public for that reason. Would you like to speak on the Senpai deck boxes and your thoughts on them and that particular aspect of them?
I'll tell you something right now. I'm going to make this very, very simple and very, very clear for everybody. My Valentina, actually, it was pretty close, but I'm pretty sure Valentina, which was the Valentine's Day box I did last year, did twice the amount of numbers of any other box that I've ever made in my entire career of doing gem. I understand that there is a negative connotation when it comes to looking at drawn cartoon women. I get it. I understand that. But there is a very, very big silent market. And there's a good possibility that the people that are talking online own these boxes. It's the internet. And the loudest ones they overspeak those that actually are purchasing these things. And to be honest with you, I love it. It's gorgeous. And to be honest with you, I've never made these boxes in terms of like display them proudly, put them on a shelf, I make them as openly viewed as possible, take them to children's card game events. Like, no, guys. The reason why I made these was because nobody was doing it. Nobody had the balls to go, I'm going to put some anime girl boobs on a deck box and call it Senpai.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
That's why gem is who we are. That's why people look at a gem product and they hold it in their hand and they're like, wow, this is really freaking cool. I remember what it felt like to hold something that I have created, and I looked at it and I was like, wow, this is actually in my hand. And I made it myself. I can only imagine what it feels like for a consumer to see the pictures, see the images, and then finally get it in their hands and they're like, I actually have one. Like, this is crazy. Whether it is quote unquote tasteful to you, right? Yes, I get it. It's not something you'd bring home and show your mother. It's not. But at the same time, we all have our guilty pleasures. We all have things that we like. There's nothing wrong with that. If there was something wrong with that, guys, we wouldn't have... I hope this word isn't too grotesque. We wouldn't have hentai sections on Crunchyroll. Like, there wouldn't be these weird realms of artwork that it's not even necessarily like what we're aiming towards people that have perversions. It's just an art form. It's an art form that if done tastefully and it looks nice and it's presented correctly, it's like lingerie on a beautiful woman. Like, yeah, don't plaster it all over, you know, Rodeo Drive. Nobody wants to see that, but man, to come home to a gorgeous woman with some beautiful lingerie on, I think you have no idea.
Interesting. This is a conversation that I remember having with Shiggy's actually a while back. Shiggy's is fantastic, by the way. Go follow Shiggy's on Twitter. Latest obsession is Call of Duty Ghost. just random bit. But speaking as a judge, don't take it to an event. You'll probably get DQ'd. Speaking as a player who is like, you are an adult and you want to enjoy something with your friends. And I would say also probably don't take it to locals, depending on your locals. Maybe ask whoever is running it. But if you are having that stuff like at your own house or you are using it with your friends, okay. Nobody should ever care about that ever. And that's where I think the place is. Clearly there is demand. So
it's for your enjoyment. And I made them purposefully where they're closed. So even if you take them to these places, right, they're not blatantly out there. It's not like it's like if you see the box, you're like, ah, I know which one that one is. It's kind of like a weird like cult, like, ah, I see you there with that thing. But at the same time, there's companies out there, smaller brands that they're doing what I'm doing. And it's not that it's necessarily like it's not I'm not saying like it's okay necessarily, like I think anybody can do whatever the hell they want. My point being though is that I feel like Gem gets a bad rep for it, while other brands that do similar things they're even friends of mine, colleagues of mine, and their comment sections are a bit different than mine.
Maybe.
And I'm a little jealous because it's like, you know, we worked hard on making this really nice for you guys. But again, like I said, at the end of the day, they are my best sellers. They are my number one sellers. Doubling numbers of other boxes, of very popular boxes. I don't like sharing the numbers, but we're talking like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 units sometimes. Big numbers, guys.
Are you satisfied as a journalist, Sonny?
I think that there is. So, Brandon, I need you to understand.
Go for it, man. Hey,
I am a consumer of these products.
I get it.
Okay. And I love the deck boxes as far as the construction, the way that they're laid out. I think they are good quality products. I worry personally about the blending of these products into what is supposed to be a children's card game, because a lot of the products on this site are marketed towards Yu-Gi-Oh!, which has a lower age grouping than... while... The intended target audience is kids. So I worry personally about the blending between them. However, I will say again that the quality on these boxes is really good. So my thing is that if you want this quality of box and you want to be able to take it to a regional and you want to be able to take it to locals and things like that, there's a lot of other boxes on the website that you can order. My personal favorite is Kraken, which I still haven't gotten one of, but I need to get myself one.
And I got like
that. There are these other boxes that you can get that are still made by Gem, that are still high quality boxes. And I will say that to anybody out there saying that they don't like the Senpai deck boxes and they don't like the Senpai models, like that model, it's just like you just said, Brandon, that these are your highest selling products by a wide margin. So make the other ones outsell Senpai. Maybe he rethinks. We'll see.
I mean, and what you said is correct, right? That's not the only thing I make.
Yeah.
It's a very small segment in my market that I kind of like tickle a little bit, like, hey, here you go, guys. You know, here's a little something for you. And just to quickly touch something really quick. I've heard that argument before of, you know, this is the target audience is supposed to be children, the games that we focus on. And the harsh reality of it is there really isn't children playing these games. And if we look at statistics of the product purchased, we look at statistics of attendance at big events, it's astronomically dominated by adults. And you know, there is a small majority, a small minority, I should say, that you know, there, it is true that there is children that play these games. There's children that play Magic the Gathering. There's children that play, you know, Y Schwartz. There's children that play a whole bunch of games. And I've done my best to try and move myself away from Yu-Gi-Oh specifically for that reason, because a lot of people have said, like this is a children's card game. Like, okay, fine, well, let me make stuff for everybody else then. Let me make other card game stuff. And then, you know, so I've heard a lot of these arguments a lot, and I don't really respond to them online. I more respond to them internally, or I'll type out a full-on message and I'll delete it right after.
Yeah. Well done, man.
Yeah. So, yes, the Senpai line, it's not for everybody. It shouldn't be for everybody. It's not made for your locals. It's not made for tier one events. It's not made for anything like that. It's made for the guy that kind of, or the girl, whoever it is, that kind of just wants something that's like, hey, like, I got this. Like, check out this thing. You know, that's all it's for. It's not anything that I'm trying to push a narrative on somebody. I'm not trying to lure perverted people into the brand. That's not it. It's, you really want to know where the idea came from? And this is what I'll end it at. The idea came from when I was a kid. I used to look at Hookups skateboard decks. I don't know if they still exist anymore.
Okay.
And I used to be like, that is so freaking cool. Like, I've never seen girl anime before. That is how the Senpai line came about, was my childhood recognizing Hookup skateboard decks. Which,
that's
for those of you guys,
amazing aside, because as like, what, you're probably about what, 30-ish?
30, yeah, 30.
So in that, like, in that vein of like Southern California, like that skateboard culture was like huge in your childhood. So it makes a ton of sense that that's where like your relation to it is.
We have
and not
go for it.
I was just gonna say, like, not a lot of people have experienced that. And you're right, and maybe it's because I'm from SoCal that a lot of people didn't really get to skateboard. I mean, if you're in Michigan, you get a skateboard 1 month out of the year.
we really covered the full range of topics today.
we moved around, we went
everywhere.
This is a good podcast, man. I love being on here with you guys. You guys have really good conversations.
Cool.
It's so fun.
It depends on the episode, but in the meantime, we do need to cover all, thank our wonderful patrons. So a huge thank you to, I'll warn you guys, there's some new ones.
Okay. Oh, jeez.
All right.
I'll brace always myself. Second, Dinomorphia Domain Expansion, which is still very good. A-tier stuff. Well, S-tier.
Yep.
Zyphorus, Ding Dongs, Hostess of the Yang Zing, HGH Cyber, Jed McCainsby, John Leal, Magic Spectre Toad Obama, Oatmeal Spaghetti, Owen Alvarado, Pistol Plays Pendulums, Silver Hope, Skyhawk Over the Beatles, Understanding and Reading are two different things, Virtually Savior's World, Visa Star Frosting These Nuts, Aaron Gardner, Alexander Chan, Asami, we got Brandon crackling, yeah. Ashless Chaps, Ezio, Simp of the Silver Castle, Blackwing Silver on the Ascendant is the best Floodgate, Blue Eyes is best, Copium, Box Wine, Dragon Maidenless Behavior, Ice Jade will win a YCS before Swoo. I'm about to Rika Glamour Tribute for Cost D's Plant Nuts in Your Mouth. Little Stinky, Max C Pack, Number C107 is better than access code.
Whoa,
Old Man
take.
Red. Yeah, that's hot. We have a lot of hot takes. Old Man Red, pin code 143, Runic Did Nothing Wrong, Sinful Soils, Sunny's Internet Gremlin, The Existence of a Terror Top implies that there is also a joyful bottom, and come on and get your game on. Thank you all so much. For your continued support of the podcast, I guess.
I love.
We love you guys.
I love that.
We love you guys, and you guys wonder who's buying the Senpai boxes. See that list?
Can I make a confession before I leave the call?
All right.
Yeah,
I'm listening.
I was definitely mashing F5 when the first one came out.
We've all mashed F5 on the
channel. All right, I'm out of here. Goodbye.
I wish Trish.
I don't have a card pun. See ya.
Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.